Welcome to Family by Design, a weekly radio program brought to you by
Wellspring Christian Family Schools,
the education ministry of WCF Church, located in Sebillesville, Maryland. We hope that today, in some way, we will help you to treasure God's design for your family.
Because the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Have you ever wondered what the essential elements of the Great Commission are? Well, education just might be one of them. I'm Joel Fisher, and I'm here in studio with educator and pastor Gary Cox. Gary, welcome.
Good to be here again.
And I'm also here with our special guest, Rachel Wilson, an educator and missionary. Rachel, glad to have you back.
Thank you for having me.
And we've had a really great series of conversations about your experience being on the mission field as an educational consultant to homeschool families who are serving the Lord. You've been on been in South America and Africa, and you're headed back to South America again. And today, I just want to turn the conversation a little more generally speaking. To talking about education and how education is, what its role is in the Great Commission. And I'll give a little bit of context for the ministry we have at Wellspring Christian Family Schools. We have affiliate programs in two nations, really three nations, actually, internationally, in Asia, and also in the Middle East. And we're seeing that education is not just a, that too. Mm-hmm. You know, it really is becoming a real means for spreading the gospel. And one of our programs is in the Philippines. And Gary, actually, you're ready to share about this, because I know this is, you were really excited about this aspect of
it. Well, yeah, it's a really exciting thing. Now, if you know anything about the Philippines, I know very little, but a country of 7,000 islands. So each little independent island has people on it, and so it requires different aspects of government. So, I mean, it's, America only has 50 states, so that's a huge difference. And, the other thing is, many, many, many of these islands are really primitive. I saw on Martyrs, Missionary, whatever. Anyway,
Voice of the Martyrs.
Yeah, thank you. Voice of the Martyrs magazine. Recently, they put a calendar out of prayer every day of the month for some nation in the world that has some persecution, and the Philippines was on there for some of those remote islands, which has, and as if you've probably heard in the news media, there were some bombings there at the end of January. Mm-hmm. in one of the southern cities, and there are some difficult areas. But anyway, they've been doing homeschooling now in the Philippines for 20 years, and it started because the missionary family was homeschooling. And so the very, very first homeschool family in the Philippines, from the Philippines, was a missionary who married a native who had another missionary come over to the Philippines and saw the homeschooling family, the benefits of it. And so they started homeschooling their own family. So they were homeschooling 10 years before we met them. But when they met us and realized we had an international program, we began working with them to help them set up some of the strictures, especially as it relates to the academic qualifications, American diploma, NCAA stature, that type of thing. So in that discussion that we had, they're very active in their government. And so their Board of Education. They've been working with them, and I was there in 2016, and they were right in the midst of a release of regulations and practices for homeschooling that the program that we work with, our affiliate, had been really prominent and front and center in getting those guidelines passed. Well, then they got the shock of their life. The Department of Education turned to our program and said, can you guys use homeschooling and help us reach? We have 4,000 islands with no education system. Can you help us?
Wow.
And I tell you, when I heard that, it's like, you've got to be kidding me. It's like, you know, and I don't understand all the details, but it's like the government has educational funds. In the Philippines, they don't mandate that you go to school because they can't provide it. But they've mandated that you have a right to education. So, you know, right now those 4,000 islands, you're going to have to leave your island and go to some other island to get educated. But they're, you know, inquiring, can we use homeschooling? So, of course, one of the questions I asked you, Rachel, and really the main reason why I'm, you know, wanted to get you on for a program is like, wow, what would it look like for a couple missionary families to utilize the core value of education, the core need, excuse me, of education as the primary missionary platform that places them into a remote location and to bring education through the homeschool connection or context? And of course, when we talked on the phone, you pretty quickly said, well, it pretty much morphed into a school as soon as you added too many more students. And actually, we know of a school that we were in relationship with in the DR Congo. That's what happened to them. They came to plant churches. The mom was homeschooling. And everybody said, well, can you homeschool our kids too? Before they know it, they have a regular school with 200 students. So it has a short life, I guess, if you're successful. But so here you are, Rachel. You thought you were going down to a new place called Ecuador, but your ship lands instead in the Philippines, and you're supposed to help head up the Philippine Department of Education missionary outreach to 4,000 islands. How are you going to do it?
I'm going to build schools. No. No, I mean, even as you were talking right now, Gary, and I think that's how most missionary schools start. Yeah. It begins with you have people who go to that nation with the intention of spreading the gospel, and parents are like, well, I can't send my kids to the national schools because of language or because the educational system is not strong enough and my kids won't be getting a good quality education. And so, you know, you may get a couple families come together and they like, okay, well, we'll do school together. And then those couple become more and more and more. And then that's what morphs you into a missionary school, where you get teachers then to come. And so I think that's how it all starts. And so it starts with individuals listening to the Great Commission and saying, I want to be part of that in the nation of specifically here for the Philippines. And they go to plant churches and they go to do medical or, you know, agricultural needs or whatever the need is. But if they go with families, they have an educational need as well. And so somebody has to fill that need. And but I think that what you're talking specifically is for the Filipinos that are there, correct?
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I would imagine that the best first missionaries would be the Filipinos. And there's quite a healthy body of Christ in the Philippines. And they're very sensitive to reaching out with the gospel. So I think we could get some families, to be sure. But, yeah. I can't get out of my spirit this desire to figure out a missionary outreach. And I realize that, you know, what you just described, you know, we do have this canned expectation of education that always leads from here to there in terms of a certain track. But if you take the biblical mandate for education, which is 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12, the scripture says that the kind of education that our children must have is education by example with their parents, so that the construct is they can provide for themselves and be a testimony. So it's almost like a missionary status, mm-hmm. be a testimony to those that are outside, but not be dependent on anybody. So, you know, financial independence is, you know, hugely the need. Now, if you look at American history, why did they ever win the Supreme Court case about mandatory or compulsory education? Well, the Supreme Court, the case was argued, well, if all of the children in our country fell on the mercy and the need and became a ward of the state to provide for them, the country would collapse. So compulsory attendance was basically a Supreme Court enacting of a biblical mandate that we need to take care of our own, mind our own business, work with our hands, provide for ourselves, and have a testimony. So that's all missionary right. So, but I'm just thinking, and I don't know the Philippine culture at all, but I'm just thinking, does it have to be the classical model, you know, K through 12, you know, the subjects that lead you to college or whatever? Or is it possible that we can have some basic functional literacy with the creative analysis of, well, what kind of a skill set? And when we talked about those on the phone, you really had some good comments. And I was wondering if you could just speak to that context. I mean, you said there's, you know, being in Ethiopia, you know, you've seen the different needs of natives in different regions. And so if you could just talk about that a little bit.
I mean, when you think about what people need educationally, you think about what's the important concepts in their culture. What is the way that they sustain life, you know? And when you're in, I'll take, for instance, a big urban city or a capital city, life is going to be distinctly different than if you're out in the rural parts of a country. So what do people need to know if they're in an urban setting? Well, they probably do need to know more of what an international world looks like. So they're going to need to be able to read and to write and to do arithmetic and understand technology, understand how to communicate with the rest of the world, understand how the rest of the world functions in some ways. Because if you want to interact with someone from Western culture, you have to have exposure to it. So in an urban setting, those would be things that you would concentrate on, which I think that's what most schools concentrate on in general. Right. But if you're in, I began to think about other regions, specifically in Ethiopia after our conversation, and I thought, okay, well, I have missionary colleagues who work in agricultural settings. They're trying to teach people how to use their land well, what to grow, when to grow it, how to care for it, and then whenever they do grow it, how to sell it to the community to make a profit, and then from that, they can sustain their life. So in that setting, do they need to know how to make the best web page to, you know, to do the, I can't think of the word in English, the propaganda, publicity for their agricultural produce? No, I mean, for them, it's word of mouth. Someone walks down the street, hey, where did you get that? Oh, I got that over here in this stand. Oh, okay, great, I'm going to go get some. They don't need a web page. They don't need a billboard. So it's word of mouth. It's more of a orality culture. But they still need to understand a little bit about numbers and a little bit about, you know, the calendar and seasons and basic necessity, things like that. So in a more agricultural setting, you wouldn't have to focus in on the big, big stuff that I think we do traditionally when it comes to school. You know, go back to the farmer's almanac, you know. What's the farmer's almanac say? You know, what did my great great grandparents, what did they know to have their farm sustained during the Great Depression? That's what we're talking about.
Right.
And then you think about, there's places in the world where people are nomadic. In the Afar region,
they're always happy.
Yes.
They're nomad.
Nomad, always happy.
Dun, dun, I didn't. Man, you guys are in the same place. I'm not even there. I'm not even there, folks.
So the word that I was trying to say was nomadic, which means that they kind of like roam from place to place. They don't have like a structure, a home, like, you know, like you and I would go to our home every single day. And they may travel for different reasons. Maybe that's where the land will take them. That's where. I'm thinking like in the Afar region in the north eastern part of Ethiopia. That's where they dig for salt. And the camels bring out the salt, big chunks of salt.
Wow.
That's a nomadic land. I mean, so what do the people who live a nomadic life need to know? Again, do they need to know the ins and outs of the World Wide Web? Probably not, you know, unless if they're like trying to sell a camel to a buyer in Addis. I'm not sure. But then again, you know, they need to know what, how do I sustain life moving from here to here? Climate, you may have to understand climate a little bit better. How do I dig this salt and not like have too big of a piece of salt that my camel's gonna be overbearing? So you always think about the cultural context of what the people of that place need first and foremost. Make that the primary goals, and then sprinkle in their, you know, basic reading, writing, arithmetic. But we have to remember there's places in this world where the Bible's not been translated yet. So we may take the Bible in with a book, and they may look at it and say, what is this? I can't read this. So, orality.
The language hasn't been yet reduced to a written language.
Exactly. So it's knowing your people that you're going to, knowing their needs, knowing how they live their life, and knowing the culture in which they live.
So what you're saying, Rachel, is really paradigm shifting, because what you're doing is helping us understand that as Americans, we know what we mean when we say education.
Yes.
But you're kind of saying, whoa, no, you have to redefine what you mean by education. And I'm sitting here listening and saying, well, you know, wait a minute, that's like, are we diminishing, like, well, we got to elevate these people. And I'm realizing, well, that itself could be a very Western idea, because mm-hmm. it's like, well, what do you mean elevating them to what? When the essence of their reality is way different than mine. Yeah. It's not, you know. And I guess I want to tie this maybe back into, okay, you know, ultimate objective here, you know, as a missionary, right? I think you said this the other day, right? The Great Commission itself contains the admonition, the command, teach.
Mm-hmm.
You got to teach. Well, like you said, Gary, if a person's language hasn't even been reduced to, you know, to a written form, how can you help them even understand the Bible, which is the essence of what we're teaching? So how do we tie this all in to, you know, to that ultimate goal of bringing the gospel to these, you know, to these 4,000 remote islands in the Philippines or the mm-hmm. northern part of Ethiopia or Ecuador, where you're headed next? I got lost in the translation. But I guess as a Christian, as a especially a Western Christian, how do I reformat my idea of education and translate that into a gospel-centered presentation of education to these people I'm trying to reach?
You know, as I was thinking and listening to what Gary was saying, what you were saying, I was thinking about the transition in my life as well, with the idea of what education looks like to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've gone from a public school setting to a Christian college setting to teaching in a missionary international school setting, to coming back here, teaching stateside in a public school, to then teaching in an international missionary school setting in Africa, and then to being an educational consultant for homeschool families. So I've gone from what tradition education looks like to now homeschooling, which in my mind, that was never traditional, even though when you think back who started teaching their kids, we didn't have schoolrooms at first. It right. was the parents.
Right.
So, I mean, my paradigm has shifted completely to understand, because I would sit in homeschool conferences and I'd be like, nope, no, you have to have, you know, 45 minute periods. You have to be teaching this and you have to have a textbook and you have to have this and you have to have that. And then I start interacting with homeschool families and I'm like, wow, I would have never thought to teach it that way. What? You taught the subject in 20 minutes and the kid's done? Great. Move on to the next thing. Why do we have all this wasted time, this filling time of fluff time in public schools, you know? So
group
it's
management time.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is. So it's understanding the cultural context for what, where that person is. And so the more that we understand the context, and we have to do this the way that Jesus did it. You know, when Jesus went in and he was in a new town, he was with the people. And I think that's the number one mistake that we sometimes make, is we just want to go in and fix it and do it our way, do it the way we know. But the best way to be a missionary, the best way to think about how do we help homeschool families, missionary homeschool families, or just families that are homeschooling, is go in, be with them, observe them, hear their needs, listen to their needs, and then we can speak into their needs, not just come in with on the white horse, like, I'm going to save you, it's going to be great. Because I've learned that in all my transitions from the many places, they always say those first 6 months, you just are the listener. You're the learner. Don't try to incorporate your thoughts automatically in the beginning, because you have to understand where you're at first before you can minister. And Jesus did that. He hung out with people.
Yeah.
And then he spoke into their lives. I mean, he was God, so he kind of had an insight that we don't, but.
Yeah, I think when we were talking the other day, I was, even if you look at the history of our own country, recently we've been in one of our classes that we teach at, this, mm-hmm. at the school program, learning about the life of George Washington Carver. And, you know, what you were describing earlier about, you know, what's the essence of what you need for what you're doing? And, you know, George Washington Carver, you know, born a slave, literally scrapped for every piece of his education that he could get. You know, this is a guy who, you know, just was relentless in pursuing, and he had all kinds of obstacles and challenges, and eventually became an associate professor at the University of Iowa State, and, you know, had arrived, and here he was, you know, teaching education, educating people. Even there, he was educating people, you know, primarily in agricultural science and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, got this call to go help Booker T. Washington Tuskegee Institute down in the South in Alabama, and, you know, they didn't need textbooks down there. They needed someone to teach them how to use their land, how to be able to reach, you know, a part where they're going to survive. And so what you just summarized is like, that makes so much sense. What do we think of as education? And what a great example of how that changed in a kind of a microcosm for you. You know, and all the different things that you've done. And so I guess the answer for our Philippines question is, we got to go over there for a year or two.
Not just a year, or three. Well, many years.
Or four or five.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm ready. So, but you know, the scripture says what from 1 Thessalonians 4:11, study to be quiet, mind your own business, work with your hands just as we taught you, so that you'll have no need that anybody provide for you, and you'll have a good testimony to those that are outside. That's the 5-4 foundation of the Protestant work ethic as it relates to education. And, you know, I will remind our listeners, the education of the Western world really hung on the back of the Protestant Reformation, as the goal was to give the tools for reading and writing, and then the command of intellectual thinking and taking responsibility to obey the word of God. And that really did change Western culture. We got 1 minute.
Rachel, as we come to a close, we just enjoyed visiting with you and hearing these different on these different topics. I just a question. Do you have an online website or a presence where you talked about this kind of stuff, or you have a blog?
I don't. I have not moved into the 21st century yet, because I'm so used to living in Africa.
You've been too busy helping.
What's your smoke signal?
Helping people. Well, I'll just say, if you've not heard any of our previous broadcasts here today, we've had just a great time talking with Rachel over the last a couple broadcasts. So I really encourage you to listen to those. And really, the stuff we've been talking about, I think, Rachel, isn't just for homeschool families on the mission field. There's been so many times where I thought, you know, this is true for anybody who's homeschooling. Yeah. And,
can you give your email address real quick?
My email address is simply my name, rachel.wilson@simm.org. And that's my email address. You can always feel free to send me a question, and I'll get to you.
We encourage folks to do that. Well, on behalf of everybody here at Family by Design and Wellspring Christian Family Schools, we are been so glad to have you, Rachel. And
thank you for
God
having me.
God bless you as you head back to South America. Please come back next week as we continue to treasure God's design for your family.
Children houses, and you can give them lands, and the riches of your efforts, and all your best laid plans. But of all that they inherit, of all that you could will, please include the unseen treasure of a life that God has filled. Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children.
Your children.
He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Someday the house will crumble. Time will turn the land to dust. And when all accounts are empty, where will you invest their trust?
But if the riches that you give him is the wisdom of his ways, then the wealth you'll leave your children will last through all their days. Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus. Is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the
Thanks for spending your time with us today here at Family by Design. Join us every Sunday when we will continue this wonderful journey, helping you to treasure God's design for your family.
Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children.
Your children.
is the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.